Welcome to Betting 360, your number one source for horse racing and sports betting insights. Coming around the bend is your host, David Duffield, with another expert interview to give you the winning edge.
Hello, welcome to Betting 360. I'm your host, David Duffield, and for episode 3, I'd like to bring on a special guest to help us once again look at punting from a different angle. Our expert today is Brendan Poots. He's a sports hedge fund manager at Prioma Capital, and he has an interesting background in professional sports as a cricketer, also as a bookmaker, and as an investment banker. And he's taken a lot of that experience and applied it to the sports betting world. So he runs a fund with external investors, and it's his job to get them good returns. And yeah, it's a non-traditional type of investment, somewhat of a pioneer in that field, I suppose you'd say. But I wanted to have a chat to him about that today, and also what the everyday punter can learn. He has some good insights into betting on soccer, also on tennis, and also some in-play trading, and some cricket as well. With the Ashes coming up, I thought it was worth chatting to him how best to go about trading or betting on cricket. So let's have a chat with Brendan. Hello again, listeners. I'd like to welcome our special guest to the show. How are you going, Brendan?
I'm well. Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, good to have you on the show, and thanks for joining us. Might as well start by explaining what, you know, to some might be a strange concept because they're used to the finance investment world, but what is Prioma Capital?
Okay, well, Prioma Capital it's a sports hedge fund, and I'll sort of go back into the genesis of the idea first of all. And that, I played cricket, county cricket a long time ago in the mid-90s, and during that time, one of the benefactors of anyone who plays cricket overseas is a rich guy who will look after you and give you the house and the car and what have you. And my guy was a bookmaker. So whilst I was playing cricket during the day, with the long summer nights, I'd be a bookmaker at night. And it was during that period that I noticed the value of sports betting. Sports betting and the sports books, particularly golf and cricket and tennis, was heavily traded over in the bookmakers over in England. And that got me thinking. And fast forward 5 or 6 years later, once I realized my cricket ambitions weren't going anywhere, I was working in finance. And the genesis of this whole idea came, I was at Columbia University in New York, and we were studying finance, and we were looking at charts of the Dow Jones Index, and they are exactly the same as the charts that were coming up from Betfair in terms of price volatility and price changes. So I wasn't keen on working in finance, but I knew everything about it, or at least I was getting taught everything about it. So I thought that I'd apply the principles of finance and trading finance and shares to trading sports. And this was made a lot easier by the advent of Betfair and BetDAQ and the other corporate bookmakers who allow you to bet in the run or online. So effectively what it is we manage money as per the interests of a superannuation fund or a fund manager, but whereas typically they invest in stocks and bonds and shares and more traditional investments, we trade sports markets for and on behalf of our clients, and we have a pooled investment scheme, and the way it works is that we take a percentage of profits and a management fee. So we trade sport just like someone else would trade gold or someone else would trade stocks.
All right, so it's a really interesting concept, and I had Elihu Foistel on the show last week, and he runs a fairly decent-sized tennis betting syndicate. So similar to what you do, but without a lot of external investors. One of the things that he spoke about, and it's pretty well known, is that, you know, there's a balance between the liquidity of a market and the edge that you can normally get, and typically the bigger the market, the harder it is to beat. So, you know, with a fund of your size and you're probably needing to make substantial bets, how do you find a winning edge in what should be pretty efficient markets?
Well, I think, and you're right, the markets, certainly what we do in a couple of the markets we trade in, the English Premier League as well as a few of the other European football leagues, as well as the major sports, tennis, cricket, golf, they're very liquid. Now, what we found is that come kickoff in, let's say, the English Premier League, the market's pretty close to what our market would be. But what we do tend to find is prior to kickoff, when the prices start going out on the Thursday for the Saturday round, there's quite a discrepancy. So if you there's an opportunity on the Thursday to put some trades in, be it either a back or a lay, and you'll be able to get out prior to the game generally with a small arbitrage type profit, and that's what we try and do. But the real value, and this is where I think our edge comes in, is once the betting's in the run and taking advantage of the events, because what tends to happen is the markets start at a relatively efficient and close to the mark, but once the event starts, there's a huge overreaction to single events in a game, be it a wicket falling in a test match, which in the scheme of things is not necessarily a huge event if the first wicket falls, because you've still got 19 to go before the test match is finished, or if there's a goal scored or there's an early goal conceded in a football match, the market overreacts. So a lot of our edge is, and a lot of our trading is actually within the match, after the match has kicked off, because prior to the game, you're right, the edge is not necessarily there.
So I understand the in trading, we'll get to that in a moment, but if the price has moved your way pre-game, so, you know, just a very simple example, but if you're on something at, say, 220, it comes into even money at kickoff, do you trade out of it then to lock in your profit, or do you think that you've got a positive, you know, EV and you'll let it ride?
We will trade out to take a little bit of the profit, to reduce, because the way we work is that we only trade, our maximum trade is only 3% of funds under management. So, say for instance, for argument's sake, we've got $100,000 under management. So our maximum trade or maximum liability at any time in a game can only be $3,000. But what we'll do before a match is, because we know we're going to trade out prior to the match, we might set our maximum liability to 10 or 15%. So what would happen is, in the event of a pre-game trade, we would have our liability to $15,000. But then before kickoff, we'd trade that out, or we'd hedge out until it's back to 3%. So by doing that, we'll have guaranteed a profit and then reduced our liability back down to where we need to be.
And what about if it's gone the wrong way and you've got that, you know, 10, 15% exposure?
Okay, we would be monitoring that between the Thursday and the Saturday. So we'd have a stop loss limit in, and we'd make sure that our analysis would be such that we'd be confident, but we would make sure that come kickoff, we wouldn't have any more than 3% exposure. So we'd have traded down our liability between the Thursday and the Saturday if the market started going wrong or going the other way.
And so I suppose the Thursday betting, the 24, 48 hours out, is that mainly done with Betfair? Because I'd imagine you'd struggle to get on with all but the biggest bookies.
Well, it's a combination. And what we find is, most of the bookmakers, because we spread out across four, we have a couple of exchanges, and we have four or five bookmakers we currently use, so you can spread it out across them. But predominantly, it's with the exchanges for the pre-game.
All right. So for the in-play stuff, how restrictive is it for the fact that you're Australian based? I know you've got other people that are overseas, but how do you go trading with the legislation as it is at the moment in Australia?
Well, that necessitated a big change in business this year, was that we got burnt a couple of times being stuck on phones in the middle of the night at our trading office here, getting called out by goals in Premier League matches. So what we did toward middle of last year was that we opened up a UK trading office, which executes trades on our behalf. So what happens is one of us in Australia will be awake watching the game, but our guy in the UK, he'll be on Skype with us, talking to us all the time throughout the match, because he can trade out at the flick of a button, whereas a number of times we've been caught on the phone watching a goal being scored as we lose our money, or we make money. So what we've done is we've now got an English office which trades or executes trades for us.
All right. I know you work closely with RMIT, and they've got a pretty strong stats team, and I think some of them do have either academic or hands-on experience in terms of betting. Can you explain how you're involved with them and how that works for Prioma?
Sure. It was about 3 years ago, or actually, to go way back, it was in my previous job in corporate Australia, involved taking a lot of interesting technologies out of universities and commercialising them, so trying to bring them into turn them into a real business and then float them or sell them off. And through that process, a long time ago, when I was speaking to RMIT, they told me about this mathematical and statistics-based algorithms they were producing for sport. Now, I was working for a large mining chemical company, so clearly we couldn't use it, but that sowed the seed. And then a couple of years ago, a chap invested in the fund, so I'm managing some of his money. And he was the guy that, and this was prior to me coming to Melbourne, but he used to write many years ago about his computer and how it tipped winners in the AFL and how the AFL tipping, he used to win it a lot. So he was obviously already enamored with the idea. So after speaking to him and after getting his investment, he then put me in touch with the guys at RMIT. So basically what they've been doing for a number of years now is they've been doing a lot of the statistics, gathering and analysis for the Australian Institute of Sport, for Australian baseball, some for AFL. But predominantly what it's been statistics around performance, how to maximize performance of an athlete. But when I spoke to them, we spoke about how those statistics and the exact same skills can be used to monitor or be predictive in terms of what may or may not happen in a sporting contest, because the data is the same, the skill set to analyze it's the same. The only thing that's different is what variables to put in and what variables to weight accordingly. So the deal we have with the RMIT at the moment is they do all the statistical analysis and build all the algorithms for us for English Premier League.
All right. So you've got what you've proven to be a profitable edge, I suppose, both in the research phase and then in actually betting it. How do you manage, or how do you assess and then manage risk versus reward? And I believe you use stop losses if things aren't going your way?
Yeah, and basically the output of this algorithm, and I see, like I, coming from a finance background, it was always to try and make the whole trading and analysis part of the operation to make it as automated as possible, but not giving up the subjectivity of an opinion. Whereas in the stock market, they have a lot of these bots working where they just basically high frequency trade and they don't actually have any, they're not trying to take advantage of the psychological aspects of a market. What happens with the algorithms that are produced, they will produce a price on an event happening, and then we will put our subjective measure to it. And the typical thing was recently with Alex Ferguson resigning, what was going to happen the other night against Swansea. Well, you'd think that Man United would be desperate to win, so you could probably shorten them a little bit, even though the model might say that they're $1.30 or $1.40, which is, I think, what their starting price was. They probably more realistically were $1.20. because of the fact that they are going to try a lot harder. So what we do is once we get a price, say a price comes out that someone is $2.20 by our model, but in the market there you can get them for $2.80 or $2.90, we will then enter the trade. We work on a 10 to 15% margin of error. So if we rate them at $2.20, if we rate them at $2.20, then we won't enter it if the market has it at $2.20. The market's got to be $2.50 or above, somewhere like that. And then we would have an exit strategy based on effectively what our maximum liability is, and we'd put a stop loss or a back bet in so that if things go wrong, we get matched and we can get out.
All right. Now, I don't expect you to give away what's working for you. I mean, you've got a fund to run and you've got staff and stats team and the rest of it. But just in general terms, say if someone is interested in tennis betting, is there any pointers you can give them on, where they could look to find value?
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of value in the men's tennis throughout the year. And to give you an example, in the Grand Slams, you've got your best of five sets and you've got Novak Djokovic playing whoever, and Novak Djokovic in the best of five sets will be $1.05 or $1.06 or something like that. And then you'll see him during the course of the year over the best of three sets, he'll be still paying $1.05, $1.06. Yet the conditions are completely different. Whereas in a five-set match, he's basically got to lose three sets to lose. In a three-set match, he can quite easily lose the first set, and then all of a sudden he's only one set away from being knocked out of a tournament, which happened only recently. So what we tend to find is that there's a lot of value going against some of the big guys in the tournaments throughout the year. A, because they're not primed for the big tournaments. Once you get you look at Federer and Djokovic, Nadal, Murray, those guys, they're now looking at looking to win Grand Slams as opposed to necessarily win some of these smaller tournaments. And what you tend to find is that the odds don't change, yet the risk increases greatly of one of these guys losing. So if you're a dollar twenty over five sets, over three sets, you should be a little bit more, because the risk is you could lose the first set, you have one break of serve in the second, and you're out of the tournament. So in terms of tennis, you look at the guys in the tournaments outside of the majors, because the majors, they're primed and there's not really value there. But certainly outside of the majors, in the best of three set tournaments, a lot of value to take a set against Federer, take a set against Murray, take a set against Djokovic, because you've seen up to now this year, they've already been knocked out early rounds a couple of times, and that's all you need when they're $1.05. You don't need them. You only need them to be knocked out one or two times, and you make a lot of money.
And what about EPL? Obviously, it's a massive betting market. Where do you think people can find value there?
Well, huge value in, if you were to look at the pure stats, Man United, when they play at home, should be paying $1.16 or $1.15 or something like that. So depending on what you decide is value, some people might find that $1.30 is not value when they should be $1.15. But if you're looking at just getting a little bit of a free hit, if you included Man United in a lot of your multis throughout the year, backing them at home when they're more than $1.15, that's a good start. But I think there's a couple of ways of trading which are very profitable, and again, taking advantage of the market overreacting. One is in the unders overs markets, when there's two and a half goal or three and a half goal market. What you tend to find is that a goal is scored no matter in the first half, and the unders and the overs markets overreacts incredibly to it. So the people who think that's going to be over 2.5 goals, the price will drop incredibly. And unrealistically. And then what you can do, you can take a bet against that, because over the course of the next 5 or 10 minutes, it immediately gets back out and you're already in the money. So there's a big opportunity with the overreacting to events in play, particularly the over and unders markets, as well as just in the outright win-loss markets. Because again, once there's a goal scored, there's a real overreaction very quickly, which you can take advantage of.
So am I right in saying you've got charts or matrixes, whatever you want to call it, where you might have some scenario where, okay, it's a $1.30 favourite scores in the first 5 minutes. You've got data saying, okay, here's what's likely to happen in the 5, 10, 15?
Yeah, so basically the way it works is we'll have Man United versus Swansea, and we'll have data which pops out saying, all right, here's the head-to-head between Man United versus Swansea. Here's the head-to-head Swansea versus a top team when they're playing away. Man United playing a middle team when they're playing at home. Da-da-da-da-da. So what will happen is that, and this is the beauty of what's been built, is that, okay, Man United score first. They score first in the 38th minute. What happens next? And then that'll give you an idea of when the next goal is potentially or most likely to be scored. And if the next goal is going to be scored at the 60-minute mark, well, then there's an opportunity there for you to bet against the unders, or bet against the overs rather, because you know there's another half hour before the goal being scored and you can trade in that period. So basically it's all probability, and obviously if there's a probability, you can then tie that back to a price. And if there's a discrepancy between the probability and the price, then we add our little bit of subjectivity, like watching the match and we see what's happening, then we'll take a play.
And what about cricket? Any pointers there for keen cricket punters with the Ashes looming?
Yeah, well, it's a wonderful sport. Obviously, it's a sport I used to play, but one of the great things about cricket is that there's so much history to it and there's so much data available, and ultimately cricket hasn't changed that much in terms of test cricket, this is. And a good example last year, or might have been the year before, I think, was one of the trades we made was Sri Lanka were playing South Africa in Durban. And that Sri Lanka had left South Africa 445 or 450 to win in the last innings. And that had only happened twice or three times before in the history of cricket. Yet they were still, South Africa were $3 favourites to win the match still, representing a 30% chance. Yet over 2,500 tests has only happened twice. So because of the history, a lot of the data, a lot of those milestones, they stack up. And what you'll see a lot of the time, and it happened again in these recent tests in New Zealand and England, is that when a side, when a side is set 380 plus to win in the last innings, you just take a set against them because history says that that's not going to happen. And if you do that every time, you'll make a lot of money. And certainly this year, as far as the Ashes goes, you'll see that a lot, that, you know, when the last innings comes about, if the side batting last needs 350 or above, and they're paying $3.50 or something like that, you just take a set against them because it just doesn't happen enough to justify those odds.
Fair enough. All right, so some good pointers there for the sports punters who are listening in. Specific to Prioma, though, can you tell the listeners what your results have been over the last, say, 3 years?
Sure. Well, started the last 3 years since we've been taking external investors' money since the start of 2010. And up until the end of last year, the return has been about 130% to the positive. So that's gross before our fees.
You mentioned fees. What are they? How do they apply?
Typically, it's 2 and 20. So it's a 2% management fee and a 20% performance fee. But the management fee, importantly, is only charged in arrears at the end of the year, on the proviso that we've made more than 2% for the client. So typically what would happen in most managed funds or hedge funds is if you gave someone $100,000, they'd already take their fees up front, so you're only playing with $96,000 or something like that. So you're behind the eight ball from the word go, whereas what happens with us is if someone was to give us $100,000, we would then have to make sure that they are at least at $103,000 by the end of the year, and if we were, then we'd take our management fee.
Yep. And is there a minimum amount to get involved if people are interested?
No, basically, we're still looking to grow the business, and we're obviously still looking. And one of the things that we know is that the more people we have involved in the business, the more likely they are to talk to other people, and then the whole network and the brand builds. So at this point, there's no limits per se, be it downside or upside.
Okay, it's a pretty good result and a decent sized fund. You must be having to get some reasonable sized bets or reasonable sized trades on.
Well, yeah, as mentioned, we're looking at in terms of the 3% is our number, our maximum trade. So again, that's if you spread that across different people or different price points. If you can do that relatively easy, it becomes a little bit more complicated with respect to the administration of it, but it's definitely doable.
And I know you're not an accountant by trades. You mentioned your background, but what are the people get their own advice, and this is not a sales pitch by any means. It's just I wanted to make people aware of an interesting concept. What are the tax implications, as far as you understand it, if people have the money with you?
Well, again, you pointed out well that we do advise everyone to take their advice, but take their own advice. But what we've found is that we've had tax attorneys as well as accounting practitioners speak to us, and to the best of their understanding is that the dividends that we produce are tax-free, and that's predominantly because there's no precedent. There has been suggested that we go to what they call as a private ruling, and that is something which we are considering at this point. But at this point, the information that we've received from two different tax attorneys and two different accounting practices is, to the best of their knowledge, because there's very little precedent in it, and historically, gambling winnings per se have been tax-free, that the dividends are indeed tax-free, which obviously is a big kick-up when we're getting some of the results that we're getting.
Exactly right. All right, so we'll leave it there for now. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And if people want more information, they head to prioma.com, PRIOMHA.com.
That's the one, or just drop an email to info@prioma.com, and we're happy to talk.
Excellent. All right, appreciate your time, Brendan.
Brilliant, Dave. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Betting 360. Get more in-depth analysis, tips, and that betting edge by heading over to championpicks.com.au, where you'll find a full transcript of this episode. If you like the show, share us with a fellow punter or drop by iTunes to leave us your thoughts. Betting 360, punting from all angles.